Thank you for taking the time to listen to this life-changing message from the Ministry of Faith Bible Chapel. We hope this message will encourage you in all parts of your life. At the end of this message, you will hear more information on how to contact our church family, as well as directions for you to visit us for any of our worship services. Until then, join us for the service in progress.
I want to start our message by taking all of us and placing us right there in the land of Israel. So grab your notes. You'll see on there it says Matthew chapter 5. We're going to spend our entire time this morning in Matthew 5. So if you've got your Bibles, open that up. Grab one from the seat in front of you or your iPhone, iPad, whatever you're using. Pull up Matthew chapter 5. We're going to spend all our time there. And my heart is to place us in this moment where Jesus begins to share on what we know as the Beatitudes. Many of you have heard of them, many of you have studied them. It's not new to you, but it's something we haven't talked about in an awful long time here at Faith, and we felt the need to unpack them once again. But some of you may not know what they are, and so this would be enriching for you, we believe, also. But the Beatitudes were these opening moments where Jesus began to teach his followers. And if you back up into Matthew chapter 4, you'll see that Jesus has been doing all sorts of healing. He's been doing all sorts of miracles. He's been restoring people. He's been healing people. He's been performing miracles. He's been gathering this following of people who were chasing after what he had to offer. And up to that point, it was healing. It was powerful. And there's a tendency in those of us who follow Christ that we lean towards the experiential. We lean towards the power of who Jesus is, and we follow him. And sometimes we'll hop from one church to another because we're looking for a church that really demonstrates the power of who Jesus is and is expectant of healings. But sometimes we don't listen as much to his teaching. And then there's other of us that maybe are a little wired more intellectually and less experientially, and we gravitate towards the teachings of Jesus. We gravitate towards preachers that can really teach the depth of the word, but we forget and forgo all the power that is offered through who Jesus really is in our lives. And so we'll lean towards churches that are more teaching-oriented and less experiential. And one of the things I value about being part of Faith Bible Chapel is that we're a good balance of both. That from the beginning and to where we are now, we value the power offered through who Jesus is, but we also value the words that he said that instruct us in life. And see, in the Beatitudes, in this moment in history in Israel, the two are coming together. He's been healing and doing miracles left and right. People are following him. He's been calling close disciples to follow him. And yet, then he begins his teaching ministry. And the reality is you can't have one without the other. Jesus is both powerful and insightful. He both offers truth through the restoration of miracles, and he delivers truth through the words that he says. So when we introduce the Beatitudes, we see both coming together in this moment. Let me place you in Israel for a moment. Let me show you a picture of what's known as the Mount of Beatitudes. This is on the northwest side of the Sea of Galilee. If you've never been there, it's this most amazing place to just overlook the entire area of the Sea of Galilee. And this hillside, this small mount, is known as the Mount of Beatitudes. History tells us that this is the location where Jesus called his disciples up on the hillside, as it says in Matthew, and then others followed. Depending on how you interpret the original language, you see that it was his close followers, but we know hundreds, if not thousands, were gathering on the hillside because they've been healed by him, restored by him throughout this area and around the Galilee. Capernaum is just off in the distance there, a literal city where he spent much of his time. But on this mount, he began his teaching ministry. You see, actually, there's a church up there. You can see it there. It's called the Church of Beatitudes. It's this amazing Roman Catholic church. It's actually built in a octagonal shape. And eight sides, one for each of the eight Beatitudes in commemoration of Jesus' teaching there. And it's this really great experience. So let's go back to the picture overlooking the sea. This is the moment, this is the place where thousands of followers were beginning to hear Christ's first words, and he began to share what the Beatitudes really are. If you don't know them, I'm going to walk through them. If you've heard them before, we're going to walk through them. These eight virtues that Jesus shares, let's take a look at them. He says, "Blessed are those who are poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." He says, "Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled." He says, "Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. And blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. We come to this point in the story where Jesus lays out these virtues and he begins to set the direction for his teaching ministry. And he starts right here. This is what he chooses to be the beginning. It's a little bit about, like, if you ever meet my mother-in-law, she'll tell a story about me. If you've ever met Darlene and you kind of find out she's my mother-in-law, she always tells the same story when she first met me and when I first met her and my father-in-law. And I'll tell you the story because she loves to tell it, and if you run into her, she will tell it every time you find out that we're related. She'll tell this story. In fact, it was the first time I got to meet them to become my in-laws. I had no idea they'd become my in-laws. Jeanette and I were 17 at the time, and we were interested in pursuing each other, and so Jeanette had me over to help her study her physics homework. And so what I didn't know, and Darlene will tell the story, is Jeanette knew I was shy and quiet and introverted, and her parents were loud and obnoxious and involved. And so Jeanette knew she had to navigate the balance of these two realities, and she was very cautious about this. So she had me over to her kitchen table to help her study physics. What I didn't know, and Darlene would tell you, is Jeanette made them go hide out in their own bedroom to wait for the right moment to introduce them to me and me to them. She knew this could be this collision of personalities that would just like send it off into some crazy direction. So I didn't know she'd set this up, but I'm sitting there studying and I'm helping her understand this problem in the physics book, and Jeanette disappears. And what I realized later is she had her parents like tiptoe down their own hallway toward the dining room so that she could introduce them to me. And here they are kind of peering. They're in their own house, and they're having to peer around the corner. Jeanette is this cautious of this potential collision. And Jeanette says, "Hey, Jeff, I want you to meet my parents, Mickey and Darlene. And Mom and Dad, this is Jeff. And I've got my ball cap on." And this, Darlene will tell the story word for word. "I'm buried in the physics book, and this is what I do. Hi." That's all I can muster. That was a courageous, like, happening for me. That was, like, extroverted for me. That was, like, all I had was two letters, an H and an I together, hi. And then Jeanette just, like, shoos them back into their bedroom, and the experience was over. This is the moment I met my future in-laws. And Darlene loves to tell this story because people find out we're related, and they go, "Well, but he speaks. But he's always up there." Well, yeah, but this is who Jeff really is when we first met him. And it's an iconic story of who I am because it, to the core, it's who I am. And she loves to tell a story because you see God at work in the life of a really quiet, shy individual. So it's this iconic story. This is what's happening at the Beatitudes. Jesus is establishing that first moment. It's iconically Jesus. It's iconically where the rest of his teaching and his ministry is going to go. What he says and instructs and invites us into in this moment shapes the trajectory of all the rest of the stories. So if we're going to understand everything he does and says going forward, we come back to what he says here in these moments as iconically following Jesus. It paints this picture of what it means to be a follower of Jesus authentically, what it really looks like. And he does this in these kind of virtuistic metaphors and stories that are sometimes hard to get our mind around. But he starts with this word blessedness. He starts with this word blessed. And the Beatitudes is a Latin word that actually means blessedness. You can write this on your notes. Beatitude means blessedness. It means happiness, but not the kind of happiness that's circumstantial, like things worked out for us or we have a certain amount of wealth. It's a different kind of happiness. It's a divine joy. It's a perfect happiness. When Jesus makes these statements that we've just gone through, he's saying somewhere within you resides, can reside, a divine joy, a perfect happiness that wells up from within. When you live out these invitations, something happens within that is beyond our comprehension. There's a divine joy that wells up from within. It's a state of being. It's not a circumstance. Blessed are those who are poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom. There's something true about their current state of being. What I love about this is, if you look closely, these are not commands. There's lots of things Jesus commanded us to do to follow him, but these aren't commands. They're not statements to do. They're not force statements to move us forward. They're invitations. They're, you find this inner joy if you exemplify this kind of life. And see, sometimes we think Jesus is all about doing. But really what I think he's saying from the very beginning is he's all about the idea of us simply being what he wants us to be. There's plenty to do, no doubt. But he's interested in who we are, what we're going to become when we follow him. You see, there is this moment, we'll go back to the picture on the hillside. I got a chance to be in Israel, Jeanette and I, about 10 years ago this year. It's going to come up on 10 years. I'm really jealous, again, that George and Cheryl are there. I wish I was there. And there's actually a tour going this September. If you're interested in going, it's full, but there's a waiting list I just found out. If they can get 6 more, they can take a second bus and get everyone on the waiting list there. So if you're interested, it's worth going. I imagine you'll get to go here. But the tour is full of busyness. You see so many things, it's incredible. But a few select places, we slow down and we take a moment to really indulge ourselves in the reality of being in Israel. And the Beatitudes is one of those places. When you're around the church, you have some spare time. They let you just walk around the gardens and begin to just have some time to pray or journal or read scripture. And in my time, I mean, what else are you going to do at the Mount of Beatitudes but read the Beatitudes? That's like what you should do. You probably shouldn't read about anything else. There you are in this place where Jesus shared these virtues. And I remember thinking, you know, Jesus, if I could do anything, I would want to live these out. Like the cry of my heart that day there was, God, can you make these things true about me? Whether or not it leads to happiness, whether or not it leads to joy, if this is what it means to follow you, I want these things to be true about my life. I'm willing for you to do what it takes to embed these into who I am. And see, they're not commands. They're not things I can check off on a list that I attained some accomplishment in who Jesus is. They're things that he does from within in us, and he invites us into these realities. You see, the crazy thing is that they're not easy teachings. They're actually fairly difficult. You know, if Jesus were in business and was doing sales and marketing, you'd have to fire him as the sales and marketing director. Like, think about it for a moment, just to make a little light of it. Like, if you start off by saying, if you want to be part of my movement, the idea is to be poor in spirit. Then he follows it up with to be meek, to find yourself in a place of mourning. This is not like, hey, come buy our stuff, be meek. Like, that's not how you sell stuff on TV. Then the crescendo is, if you follow my ways, you'll find yourself persecuted at the end of it. You see, Jesus isn't interested in selling anything. He's actually interested in what it means to authentically know him and follow him. See, his kingdom is different. But 2,000 years later, we often try and dress it up. But iconically who Jesus is and iconically what it means to follow him is found in these virtues, these beatitudes, these phrases and statements that challenge us and draw us closer to him. You see, they're difficult teachings at times, but there's richness in them. There's depth in them. There's hope in them. Let me step aside for a moment and kind of play teacher and break down a little bit about the Beatitudes. You see, there's 8 Beatitudes, but they're one unit, and they work together. Let's look at the first 4 of those again. There's 8 of them working together, and you'll see this on your notes. Actually, I'm going to have you flip to the other side. There's future promises that are sandwiched by present assurance. Future promises that are sandwiched by present assurance. Let me explain what that means, because these things are working together. You know an Oreo cookie? It's got the 2 outer crusts and the inside cream center. That's kind of what's happening in the Beatitudes, that the first Beatitude and the last Beatitude are related, and there's greatness in the middle. Let's take a look at the first one again. Matthew 5:3, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. That's present tense. There's a present assurance. There's something to be possessed. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven. When you find yourself poor in spirit, you're right in the middle of what it means to be part of the kingdom of heaven. There's no matter what you're facing, no matter what trial is in front of you, no matter, you know, we talked about it during worship. Some of us are on mountaintops, some of us find ourselves in the valley. Whatever you're facing, Jesus reminds us that where you find yourself poor in spirit, right in there, that's where the kingdom of heaven is. There's an assurance that you're right in the right spot, that he's with you and you're with him. That if we embrace that idea, there's a present assurance that helps us face everything that is in front of us. He starts it with that. And then in verse 10, at the last one, he ends it with that. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. It's present tense. Right there, if you find yourself persecuted, if you find yourself picked on, if you find yourself people slandering against you, you're right in the midst of his kingdom. That he's right there to carry you through it. He's with you. He hasn't forgotten you. There's present assurance at both ends. And then in the middle are all these promises that we can count on. Let's go back to some of those middle ones. We talked about theirs is the kingdom is present right now, but in the future, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. You see, when you find yourself mourning, comfort is on the horizon. There's a future promise there. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Listen, you don't have to champion yourself and stand up for yourself. When you walk in meekness, which we'll talk about more later, there's an inheritance, a richness that comes from that. Blessed are those that are hungry and thirsting for righteousness. You see, there's an emptiness, but there will be filling that comes. When you find yourself empty, he offers a filling. These are future promises. Let's go on into verse 7. Blessed are the merciful, for they'll be shown mercy. You see, mercy is coming. If you find yourself needing mercy, there's a future promise. It's coming. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. There's more revelation God wants to do in your life. He wants to draw you closer to him and reveal himself to you in new and fresh ways. That's a promise we can count on. Blessed are peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. There's this promise that there's an identity in who Christ is and who we are in Christ that is coming, that he's pulling us to and drawing us to. You see, no matter what we're facing now or in the future, there's present assurance Christ offers us, and there's future promises. There, it's all there. Whatever we're going to face, it's right here in the Beatitudes. He wants to get us closer to him by doing that. You see, the whole thing ends with this idea that if you live this way, it's going to lead to persecution. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. It kind of makes you ask, what is this persecution? I think sometimes in America, we think we understand persecution because we face some persecution. And we know historically in the church, people have actually truly been persecuted. Like, people have gone to prison for their faith. They've been beaten for their faith. They've been martyred and murdered for their faith. This is persecution. We understand it to be true historically, and we know that it's happening throughout the world right now. But because we're followers and we read this about what Jesus says, sometimes we take that idea of persecution and we overlay it onto every difficulty we're facing. And we say, man, I'm just being persecuted at work. Or I'm just facing persecution everywhere I turn. And I want to clarify, sometimes it's not persecution. Sometimes it's just the natural hostility that comes in interacting with humans. Sometimes it's just the reality of life. And we label it persecution, but sometimes we miss it. I get to counsel people sometimes and meet with them, and sometimes I'll run into someone, they're truly being persecuted at work. Someone knows their faith and knows how they follow Jesus, and they're just trying to make it hard on them to work where they work because they follow Jesus. But I run into more people who say they're being persecuted at work, where the reality is you get to hear their story. No one at their workplace knows they actually follow Jesus. No one's picking on them because of their faith. In fact, they're facing hostility probably because they show up late to work every day and they actually don't do a very good job. But as Christians, sometimes we label that persecution and say, well, I'll just have to find joy in that. No, do a good job at work. Like, show up on time. Be kind to others. I run into people when I meet with them and they describe how at the water cooler, they're always arguing with people and trying to stand for what's right and politics this, economy this, and truth this. And really, you're just being a hostile person in an environment. What you're feeling is their responsive hostility. It's not their persecution. You see, Jesus isn't talking about that kind of persecution. He doesn't say, blessed are those that are persecuted, period. He said, blessed are those that are persecuted for righteousness. Let me explain for a moment what righteousness actually means here. It doesn't mean morality. If you read into the original language, Jesus is not talking about a moral code or a standard of living or an ethic. He's talking about the righteousness found in living out the Beatitudes. He's talking about blessed are those that are persecuted because they walk in meekness. He's talking about those that are persecuted because they walk in mercy. He's not talking about how you live, the behavior you have, the moral code you stand for, how you can point out how everyone else is missing out on this moral ethic of living like Jesus. He's not talking about persecution for our arrogance about our faith, for our stubbornness about who we are. He's talking about persecution for our kindness. Let me explain what I mean by some of these ideas that it's not about how we behave. You see, the Pharisees, they were all about living to a certain moral code, and they made sure everyone knew how they lived and how everyone else should live. And they made righteousness about a moral code, but Jesus's righteousness is about walking humbly. You see, Jeanette and I have two kids. We love them both. We were told we couldn't have kids, so both of them were surprises. And like all parents, we love our children immensely. But the reality is our children aren't perfect kids, and we're not perfect parents. And so at times we've got to correct them. And with our son David, he's 9. He's going to be 10 in a month. And there's some challenging times we've got to correct. And what we found is when we find ourselves correcting behavior, when we find ourselves correcting something he's done, we're already too late. You see, sometimes we're like, David, didn't we tell you yesterday not to do that? And we have to remind him, we said don't do that, but you did it. We've got to correct that. And sometimes, as you know, didn't we tell you 5 minutes ago not to do that? Where do we miss this point here? But Jeanette and I, really, we've got to take a step back. If we're correcting behavior, sure, he did something wrong. We've got to correct that. But we've got to look at ourselves and say, what did we miss? Because behavior is at the end of the cycle. You see, before behavior is words and thoughts, and before words and thoughts are attitudes. And at the very core of attitudes is the shape and culture of his heart. And so when we're correcting behavior, we're just correcting the symptom. We're not correcting the sickness. And so what Jesus is saying here with these Beatitudes is, listen, the Pharisees all day are talking about the symptoms. Follow this law, do this this way, in this order, on this kind of day. But he said, I'm going to speak to the core of things. I'm going to speak to the core of the heart, the value and shape of your heart. Because if your heart is right, then it's going to shape your attitudes. And if your attitudes are right, it's going to shape your thoughts and shape your words. And if your thoughts and words are right, it's going to shape your behaviors. And so Jesus says, I'm not at all interested in your behaviors or your actions. I want to start at the very core. I want to start at who you are and how you're shaped, because that'll drive your attitudes, your words, and your actions. This is what Jesus is talking about with these Beatitudes. He's talking about a heart that's shaped by mercy, a heart that recognizes that when I'm in the presence of God, that I need his mercy, that I'm meek because I understand he is great. This is the core of what Jesus is talking about. You see, we kind of dissected the Beatitudes. The first and the last are related, and the middle ones are kind of the cream filling. But there's another way to dissect the Beatitudes. You can actually split them, the first four and the second four. So let's take a look at the first four. These first four all have a characteristic that is different than the next four. Check this out. Blessed are the poor in spirit. That, to me, exemplifies something being empty. That there's something lacking, that I realize when I walk through life in the shadow of who God is, man, I'm broken. I'm just dust. And he is everything. And he is good. There's an emptiness that is found in carrying yourself poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. There's this idea that, man, in our loss, we're empty. That we've lost out on something we desired or that we had. And when we find ourselves mourning, we find ourselves filled with emptiness. Christ is saying somewhere in here is joy. Somewhere in this state of being of mourning and poor in spirit, there's joy. In this emptiness, there's joy. He continues, blessed are the meek. A state of meekness is a state of emptiness. That God, I can only do so much. You've got to do the rest. It's understanding who we really are. There's an emptiness that is found in meekness. Ultimately, we understand when we're empty, we get hungry. We get thirsty. When we're hungry or thirsty, that there's something empty internally to us. Well, this is true spiritually as well. Blessed are those that hunger and thirst. You see, we desire the righteousness of God, not moral living, although that's important. We desire the way about who Jesus teaches us to be. We hunger and thirst for it out of our emptiness. Emptiness is a good thing. We often think of it as a bad thing, but what Jesus is really saying is when you carry yourself with a posture of emptiness, when you carry yourself with a posture of being in need, That's where your hunger for me really begins to develop. Your thirst for me really begins to develop. Well, here's the great thing. After he teaches on the value of emptiness, he begins to share on the value of being filled. Blessed are the merciful. You see, to be merciful, you have to have some strength. There has to be an infilling of who God is in you so you can offer mercy to others. That's not a state of emptiness. It's a state of fullness that Jesus provides. Blessed are the pure in heart. When you're pure in heart, it means that your motives are filled with God's ways, that your actions are filled with godly intent towards others. You see, this is a place of fullness. Blessed are the peacemakers. You see, joy is found when we're filled with the ability to have strength in relationships to bring about peace. When we bring peace to our marriages, when we bring peace to our families, when we bring peace to our neighborhoods, our workplaces, that's a place of strength, a place of being filled, ultimately to the point where blessed are those who are persecuted because of this ability. You see, Jesus teaches on both ends of the spectrum. He says, man, following me means to be empty. To empty yourself, to find yourself empty. But when you do, there's joy in it because I fill you with the ability to be merciful to others, to find yourself pure in heart toward others, to be a peacemaker to those around you. There's an emptiness that's matched by a filling that he provides us. I imagine this morning some of us need that kind of feeling. At the end of it, you see, Jesus begins to share that persecution comes when we live this way. Persecution comes not because we're like standing for some moral code. Persecution can actually come when we're offering peace to others, when we're offering mercy to others. You kind of got to ask yourself, how does this happen? But it can. He goes on to encourage us, Matthew 5:11. You'll see it here on the screen. He reminds us that when you live this way fully, when you're empty that leads to fullness, here's what happens. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. He says, take this on as a joy and a blessing. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. See, he says, you're not alone. People who have been following God the Father their whole life have been persecuted this way. You're not alone. He says, find rejoicing and be glad in it. He continues past the Beatitudes. He begins to teach on salt and light. He says in Matthew 5:13, you are the salt of the earth. In Matthew 5:14, it says, you are the light of the world. You see, when you live empty and it leads to fullness, you begin to inspire and shape the world around you. You begin to be salt to the earth. You begin to be light to the world. This is a profound experience that when we don't stand for our rights, when we walk empty and he fills us, we begin to shape those around us. This is why persecution comes. This is why persecution comes on us. This is what people see and sometimes despise. You see, when you live this way, it can be attractive. It can win others over, but it can also shape people to be against you. You see, people have kind of two choices. You can shape the world one of two ways. You can live evil. You can live out evil motives with evil ends, and that will shape the world. On that end of the spectrum, you could easily place someone like Adolf Hitler. Nazism. He lived evilly, but it shaped the world. His intentions were motivated by evil and hate. On the other end of the spectrum, you can place someone like Mother Teresa. She walked in meekness, humbly, offering mercy to those in need, offering all that she had, living empty, but God filling her. That's that life of nobility. Well, what happens for those of us that are here on a Sunday morning, my guess is most of us aren't going to pursue evil ends. Like, we're not in that trap. We might do some things that aren't great for us or for others around us, but we're not going to set out on a course of evil. But we recognize also at this end of the spectrum, that's a difficult journey to live a life of nobility, to walk in meekness, to walk in mercy. That requires a strength that is sometimes not worth pursuing. And so we find ourselves just hiding out in the middle of mediocrity, of the status quo. And what happens in life when you begin to pursue a life of nobility, when you begin to walk empty that leads to fullness, it shakes things up. It draws people to you, no doubt. It allows you to minister to many, but it begins to shake up and create a turbulence around you. It'll agitate those that are jealous of your pursuit of that. In fact, what it says to them, you don't do it on purpose, but sometimes it says to someone, listen, I'm going to keep my small life while you keep your big life, and I don't like you for that. While you chase Jesus, I'm comfortable here, and it stirs up an agitation in them. This is the kind of persecution Jesus is talking about. This happened to my wife a number of years ago. My wife, Jeanette, she's made all the difference in my life. And about 8 years ago, she had a friendship, a really close friendship, a best friend, that this occurrence happened. We didn't see it coming. One night, they had us over to their house. And of anyone I've ever met, my wife lives out. She couldn't quote the Beatitudes to you, but she lives them out like no one I've ever met. She walks humbly. She walks mercifully. She's resilient. When you hurt her, man, she'll just come back to life the moment you apologize. She's ready to forgive and walk in mercy. Now, don't get me wrong. You can't kind of plow over her. If you're doing something wrong, she'll lovingly speak to it. I'm the benefactor of that happening hundreds and thousands of times. So she's not a pushover. Don't get me wrong. But the moment that you're willing to come and say, man, I really messed up, her mercy and her resilience just is resounding. This is who my wife is. We had these friends who called us over. And they said, Jeanette, we want to have a friendship breakup. Like, that's what you're here in our house for. And it sent Jeanette reeling, like, what are you talking about? And the accusation was, you're too hopeful for us. You're too joy-filled for us. Like, when we're going through hard times, we need you to be negative with us. And you're not negative enough. And we can't hang out with you anymore. It's frustrating. Like, you're always saying God can do this or God's going to do that. And that's because Jeanette is, because she believes that God can do all those things. And it was this really painful season. For 2 years, this friend and Jeanette didn't speak. And we had been praying with them for years for certain miracles to happen in their lives, and they hadn't happened. And I promise you, every single day that this person wouldn't speak to Jeanette, Jeanette was praying for her, for those miracles to happen. Jeanette felt the pain of that rejection, no doubt. But the moment an opportunity would have come for them to reconcile, Jeanette was ready to forgive. Now don't get me wrong, Jeanette is not perfect. She did all sort of things that you got to figure out in friendship that probably didn't help things. But the accusation against her was, you walk too mercifully. You walk too hopefully. You walk too full of faith, and we don't want to be around you anymore. Well, God worked it together where this miracle came to happen in this person's life, and it led to her and Jeanette reconnecting. And the moment it happened, Jeanette forgave. She had already forgiven and restored the friendship. But you see, when you live to a life of nobility, it's going to make others realize their willingness to fall short of what Christ is calling to them. It will agitate and add turbulence to the status quo. This is the kind of persecution Jesus is talking about. He's talking about the kind of life that is so giving and so loving and so merciful that it causes others to either draw to you or reject you because of their own sense of emptiness. You see, there's hope in the Beatitudes. When you find yourself at this place of persecution, the Beatitudes offer hope because Jesus is saying, iconically following me looks like this: emptiness that leads to fullness, emptiness that leads to me giving you strength, weakness that leads to my strength moving and flowing through you. And I want to ask you this morning to think about those valleys you're facing right now. Think about that doctor's prognosis. Think about that financial bill that just came in. Think about that relationship that just feels like it's hanging on by a thread. Think about that valley that you're in. And I want to read you the Beatitudes in a different form. We've been walking through them through the NIV. It's a very poetic laying out of the Beatitudes. And sometimes in the poetic nature, we can memorize things, but they don't get to our core. You see, Eugene Peterson, this pastor of 40 years, loves to paraphrase Scripture in a way that can soak into the core of who we are. I want to read what Eugene Peterson, how he rewrote and paraphrased the Beatitudes, because I think it will soak in. So as I read these, think about that situation you're facing. Let these words of Eugene Peterson soak in as he paraphrases what Jesus was saying on that hillside on the Sea of Galilee. He says this: you are blessed when you're at the end of your rope. With less of you, there is more of God and His rule. You're blessed when you feel you've lost what is most dear to you. Only then can you be embraced by the one who is most dear. You're blessed when you're content with just who you are, no more and no less. That's the moment you find yourselves proud owners of everything that can't be bought. You see, sometimes we're striving for so much, we're trying to do so much, we're trying to become so much, and Jesus says, just be comfortable with who you are. No more, no less. That's an inheritance. Eugene Peterson continues. He writes, you're blessed when you've worked up a good appetite for God. He's the food and drink in the best meal you will ever eat. You're blessed when you care, because at the moment of being care-filled, you'll find yourselves cared for. He continues, you're blessed when you get your inside world, your mind and your heart put in right order. Then you can see God and the outside world. See, sometimes those of us struggling, like, where is God in the economy? Where is God in politics? Where is God in my workplace? Maybe there's some inner things, mind and heart, we need to put in right order. Because then we can begin to see God at work in the lives of others around us. And then we can begin to move toward his ends in their life. Let's put our heart in order. Eugene Peterson continues with two more. You're blessed when you can show people how to cooperate instead of compete or fight. That's when you'll discover who you really are and your place in God's family. See, when we're in God's family here, we know we're God's children. We find that identity because we're willing to build each other up and not tear each other down. We're willing to add to unity, not to division. We don't murmur and complain, but we build up. You see, that's what it means to be God's children. And finally, you're blessed when your commitment to God provokes persecution. The persecution you're facing drives you even deeper into God's kingdom. You see, what Jesus is talking about here is really a choice. He's really saying there's two kinds of choices with our lives. There's choices to just remain in the status quo, or the choice to pursue him in a lifestyle of emptiness that allows him to fill us in a way we never thought possible. He says, when you do this, you may face persecution, but that's your opportunity to be the salt to the earth, the light to the world. Don't live anymore in the mediocrity. Live for something greater than you ever imagined. You see, what Jesus was really doing at the Beatitudes, he was pointing toward the future. No one there who had just been healed miraculously or restored had any idea that he was headed for the cross. But Jesus knew he was headed for the cross, that in some 3 years he would leave meekly, he would live mercifully, he would heal and benefit others, and it would lead to his own persecution. You see, Jesus wasn't saying anything or inviting us in anything that he wasn't willing to live out himself. He lived empty so that he could be our fullness on the cross. And when I think about the cross, it's a strange thing. In and of itself, it's really, there's nothing beautiful about it. In and of itself, there's nothing meaningful about it. It was a Roman Empire method of execution. And in some ways, Jesus just one of thousands that had been executed on a cross. It's capital punishment in all its brutality. And there's no meaning or beauty in it, except for when Jesus adds meaning. When he says, all the things you're facing, I'm going to carry on my shoulders. All the ways you've fallen short, I'm going to put that on my shoulders. All the hope I have for you, that when I want you to live meekly and mercifully, when I want you to be peacemakers, all your inability to do that, I'm going to put that on my shoulders and I'm going to give it back to you. When we realize that Jesus set out at the Beatitudes with this lifestyle that would lead to his own persecution, and he did that for us, we realize the cross becomes this beautiful thing. It becomes meaningful. It becomes beautiful. It becomes transformative in our lives. And so I wonder this morning if there's any of us that just need to surrender to who Jesus is. I wonder if some of us maybe not outrightly been living out evil, but we've been doing some things that behaviorally we know are not right. And maybe it's because we haven't let Jesus control and influence our words or our thoughts or our attitudes, and really we haven't let him have our heart. I wonder if there's some of us this morning that need to give Jesus our whole heart. And I wonder if there's some of us in the middle that we've accepted, just we show up at church and we're okay with the mediocrity of life, that we're not going to do anything terrible, but it's too hard to pursue anything great. But Jesus would say to you, I have so much more than that for you. I wonder if there's some surrendering that needs to happen to let him in more fully like you never have before. And I wonder if there's some of us that have been pursuing him with our whole hearts, but somehow it became work, that somehow it became, let me just check off the boxes of what I'm supposed to do for him, and you've lost joy. You've lost all sense that following him leads to divine joy from within. I wonder if there's some of us that just need to surrender our own goodness, our own sense of self-righteousness, that we need to release that and surrender it so that he can move.
We hope that this message has spoken something personal to you. If you would like more information about our church family or service times, please call us at 303-424-2121 or visit us at our website, www.fbci.org. Faith Bible Chapel currently meets in our Family Worship Center, located on the corner of 62nd Avenue and Ward Road.